You're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Looseheads podcast.
So hello and welcome back to the latest episode of the Looseheads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill. And this might well be our final episode before we take a break for Christmas, but I'm not too sure on that bit. We're really looking forward to this one anyway. And before we get cracking, do follow the Looseheads guys on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook to see the incredible work they're getting up to. And subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and it is now on Spotify as well. So do that and check out the Looseheads Foundation on looseheads.co.uk as well. So with all the admin done, it's time to introduce the Looseheads founders as always, and it's Mark Shotton, Dave Nicol and Rob Shotton who join us this afternoon. And Mark, first of all, nice to have you back after your week off last week.
Yeah, had a nice holiday last week. Sorry.
Yeah, really poor.
I couldn't miss this one though, because I've got some properly interesting questions just before you announce who it is, Chris.
Great stuff. Well, we'll leave the listeners on tenterhooks going into the podcast. And just before we do introduce our next guest, Rob, I just wanted to get you on a new member of the Looseheads team. I know where you announced Callum Sheedy as ambassador this week.
Yeah, Shido's on board. I've done a few bits with him at Bristol. He's a big character at the Bears. So, it's really good to have Callum on board. Definitely, yeah.
Stuff. Well, it would have been a good week for Callum becoming a Looseheads ambassador, and also his beloved Leeds United getting the 3 points last night against Newcastle. Another football fan who will be very delighted with his team's result last night joins us on the podcast now, and it's none other than London Irish legend and, more importantly, Liverpool fan Topsy Ojo. So, Topsy, thanks very much for giving us your time this afternoon to have a chat on the Looseheads podcast. Have you recovered from the celebrations of last night?
I have, yeah. It was nervy for a long time. Felt like one of those games that we were going to keep knocking on the door. They were going to sneak a counter-attack, and 90th minute header, lo and behold, simple set piece and 3 points in the bag. So yeah, very happy. Even Mourinho giving it some at the end, best team lost and all that. It's like, well, you might have had the best chances, but you weren't the best team, no chance. So no, very happy.
And we definitely don't do it on purpose, but we do get a lot of Liverpool fans on the podcast, but we promise we don't do it on purpose. But there is a good reason why we got Topsy on. We're going to talk about all his rugby career, obviously, one of, as I said, the London Irish legend, but we're also going to talk about sort of his move away from the sport, his media work, and of course, we'll touch on Looseheads and the mental health aspect of it as well, and the Mars 15 at the end of the podcast. So first of all, Topsy, I know we've done a few things for Talking Rugby Union since you hung up the boots last year, but obviously a lot of the stuff you've been doing recently as well has been around the media work covering the Autumn Nations Cup on Amazon Prime, but obviously doing bits and pieces for BBC Radio and BT Sport as well. So how much have you enjoyed that aspect of your job since you've retired, Topsy, because obviously you're still in and around the game?
Yeah. I feel very lucky, very fortunate, because, you know, as we know, this year has been crazy, but I think since rugby restarted kind of middle of August, there's only been a couple of weeks where I've not had a game to work at. It's obviously the season's been crazy, it's been rescheduled, but things are happening thick and fast, and I've been able to stay busy, stay a part of it, work for obviously different broadcasts, doing BT, doing BBC Five Live, of course, Amazon Prime for the Autumn Nations Cup was brilliant, just hugely unexpected. You know, I kind of asked, you know, was there any opportunity? And I got an immediate, actually, yeah, we've got something that we think you would be great for. Really enjoyed it. Again, obviously, you know, I talk about the luck, you know, when everybody's at home, they can only watch it on TVs, and I'm there going to grounds, being able to watch it firsthand and talk about it and broadcast it. Just very, very fortunate. So it's kept me really busy. I think my wife thinks that it's almost like I'm back playing, you know, I'm disappearing every weekend, and she says, hang on, I thought we retired from this life. But like I say, with everything going on, it's kind of just great to still be in the mix and to still be busy and to kind of, I guess, you know, be bringing this to everybody who's still at home.
Yeah, absolutely, Topsy. And is it kind of important, maybe players who do take that step away from the game, to try and keep busy as much as possible? And I know we've spoken before and talking with Beanie and Topsy about kind of, you've had a lot of little things to focus on since you stopped playing. So I know you're still an ambassador for London Irish. You've done a bit of coaching. You touched on your media work. But is it important to have something to keep the mind busy when you have rugby taken away from you, if you like?
I think it's important to have a focus point. And I think it was Haskell that said it. You know, I think you don't want to be too busy where it feels like you're almost running away from something. I mean, like, being a professional rugby player is unbelievable. It's a great career. It's a great job. And everyone always said to me in retirement, nothing will ever replace that buzz. Obviously, you'll find things that get close to it. But I think if you keep chasing that exact feeling, trying to replicate it, you can almost get lost in it. And actually being busy sometimes can maybe be a good distraction, but not in the right way. I think where I've, again, I say lucky all the time. I know I worked at it to put it in position, but all the things that I do now, the coaching, the ambassador work, the media, they actually fit in quite well with each other in that it keeps me busy, but it gives me enough downtime as well for family to be at home and to have a day off sometimes. If I need a day off to just sit and veg and watch Netflix and do all that I can. So at the moment, that balance is really good. But I think once you kind of find like a new focus, a new direction, then it's really good to kind of sink your teeth into that. And I guess, you know, you're almost creating a new identity for yourself. So that takes work.
In terms of that shift from playing to kind of the off the field stuff, did you have much help and support around that from the club, your agent, that kind of thing? Or was it just feel your own kind of way?
No, I had quite a bit of support. And actually, now I think about it, now that you've asked me, I mean, like, a lot of people helped me out. I guess given the career I'd had, London Irish created the ambassador role for me. I think, you know, the timing with Brentford and all that, it was very seamless and it was a good opportunity to do it. So that just worked out really well in my favour. Ugo was actually a big help in terms of the media stuff, in terms of, you know, telling me the right people to speak to. And, you know, he put me in contact with some really good people to get that up and running. My agent as well, definitely in terms of coaching. I mean, I knew I enjoyed coaching for a long time and I wanted to explore it and get into it. So he was very like, okay, let's get your badges. Let's see. Let's think about maybe getting you some part-time experience somewhere so that as and when you finish playing, you're in a really good position to kind of transition into a possible coaching role if that's what happens. So a lot of things were in place. I had a lot of help as well, even just talking to people that had been before me that had retired. You know, everyone says it's hard, you know, guys like Bob Casey, Kieran Roach as well, a couple of guys before me, like, I mean, I've lost the names, but there was enough that I had a good kind of bag of information that I could kind of lean on and go, right, okay, this is what I can kind of expect. Of course, until you're in it, you never really know, but at least I'm as prepared as I think I can be.
And do you think as well, Topsy, just speaking to those people that you've highlighted there, does really help when you are transitioning out the game? Because I think you did an interview around sort of this year, talking about the pandemic, and a lot of players would have been in a situation where they were potentially looking at a new contract towards the end of the season and the season just came to a halt and they were potentially left at a crossroads. So is it important to speak to those people as early as possible, really, who may have experienced it, to get a few things in the pipeline just in case something happens?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, it still is such a foreign world, and especially depending on what industry you're going to. Like I say, you know, I'm probably in industries that I'm very comfortable in, having worked in that probably right the way through my career. But, like, I think about guys that, you know, are going into the city, going into insurance and banking, and all of a sudden you go from, I guess, 3-4 days training, weekend, couple of days off, finishing at 3-4 o'clock, to you're on the commute into London at 7 a.m. You're getting back at 6, 7, 8, 9. All of a sudden you're doing those sorts of hours and it's quite intense. So that shift is really difficult. So I think whatever you're going into, like, the more information you have, the better you can be prepared. I mean, there's always that shock initially. I think it was Dave Lewis at Queens. I remember him pretty much retiring and the next week was like, right, I'm on my commute to London. I was like, man, that is a shift. So I think those guys are actually the ones that I say fair play to you, because I mean, I don't think I could do that. Like, I knew that I didn't want to do that. So I prepared accordingly. But yeah, fair play to them.
Yeah, because we had Greg Bateman on the podcast last week, Topsy, and he was talking about sort of the work the RPA do. And he was talking about, well, what they do really well is they do give kind of players the opportunity to go in experience work potentially and go out and do maybe 2 weeks work experience, see if it's for them. And if it's not for them, fair play, at least they tried it. So do organisations like that, like the RPA, just give players that helping hand, if you like?
Yeah, they're huge, because, again, in the professional environment, when you're training and playing, that is kind of where majority of your focus is. But I think there's definitely been a shift now over the last, probably the last decade maybe, but it gets more of a year towards an eye on what's happening after the game. We see more players retiring earlier, more players coming out and saying they struggled in those early years in retirement. So things like, you know, the RPA's Gain Line program are brilliant in terms of preparing you. They've got, you know, a bucket load of sponsors, contacts. So depending what industry you want to go into, they can put you in touch with the right people. I remember we did a media insight day at Sky Sports. So four or five of us went down, toured the studios, speaking to different people in different departments. So, I mean, just things like that. And it gives you a flavour of what to expect, actually, when you get into those industries. And I say those contacts are invaluable because, you know, you rugby kind of delays your real life, as it were. So when you actually come out into some of these jobs, you know, guys have been doing it since they maybe finish university, maybe even finish school at like 18 and 21. So they're that far ahead of you. So you do almost need some friends to be able to help you kind of play catch up and get to grips with what the world is like outside of a professional rugby environment.
Yeah, and you talk about kind of the shift there, Topsy, of players actually, you know, going out and doing these work experience. And I think it's a trend in rugby that we are seeing a lot of players now plan for life after rugby. Another trend, which is what brings me on to kind of the loose heads kind of thing, is mental health awareness. And we've seen definitely over the last couple of years or so, a lot of players and ex-players and people in the game are talking more about mental health. And I just wanted to ask you how you kind of found out about loose heads, Topsy, because as we were doing our planning meeting yesterday and Rob mentioned that you got in touch with him to ask about an article that you were doing in the Evening Standard or whether you could mention Looseheads in there. So how did you find out about Looseheads, Topsy, and why do you think these organisations like Looseheads are so important to the game at the moment?
Yeah, so initially, Rob actually, I can't remember the exact date, but I don't know if you remember, you actually messaged me first.
Yeah, quite way a while back. Yeah.
You were kind of first getting off the ground. And like, I mean, I follow you guys, all your social media and stuff, and I've seen the rise in what you're doing and the exposure. And I think it's been brilliant. And you kind of touched on it there. There's kind of been, I say a boom, but you know what I mean, in terms of the amount of players coming out in the last 5, 6, 7, maybe a decade, saying how they've kind of struggled through the game, how they've kept things to themselves, how they've tried to take it all on board, all on their own. And they wish that they would have had better support when these incidents were occurring so that maybe they could have dealt with them a bit better rather than suffering in silence, rather than going through that pain. I guess having someone to lean on, someone to shoulder some of that burden, someone to just share it with. It's quite huge now. And I think a lot of people are becoming more aware of that. They understand how important it is. It's something that, you know, I've really had an eye on in the last year, I would say, in terms of my coaching and how I can, I guess, have a bit more of an impact. So I've been really kind of looking into mentoring and trying to work with younger players so that, I mean, things will still happen. It's life and life is difficult. But I just thought to myself, if there was something I could do in terms of my coaching to offset anything that may happen later on, why not do that? Why not work with players younger, mentor them, give them that support, kind of that comfort, that guidance, so that hopefully we have less players coming out saying, actually, when I was struggling, I kept it to myself. I had no one to turn to. And so I get with my Evening Standard column, basically, I have an opportunity to have a sponsor. And I guess you guys jumped out straight away because, I mean, it's my choice. I can pick who's attached to it. And I felt, especially with the pandemic and everything that's happening, again, a real big spotlight on mental health. So I thought, you know, there's an opportunity here because I love what you've got, Looseheads have done. So if I could help and just raise a bit more awareness, tell people that there is help out there, there's a way to get support if they need it, I was more than happy to do that. So that's how you guys ended up in the Evening Standard.
That's very, very kind of you. And we've not had a chance to thank you properly. So thank you. You know, I think it's a big thing for us at the moment as we grow is the education part. So if someone comes across Looseheads in a newspaper article or on social media, especially during this tough time where there is a lot of people struggling, I've said it before, but if someone stumbles across our page and takes one or two things, then, you know, we win a little bit. Or if that starts a conversation, we win a little bit and we've helped someone. And it's all about multiplying that at the moment, especially.
You mentioned that education there as well, Rob, and just bringing it back to what Topsy said, and you said there, Topsy, that, you know, you've kind of been more aware of it over maybe the last sort of year or so, and you've brought that into your coaching, as you say. But without that education, without things like loose heads, would you have ever thought about maybe changing your method slightly and focusing on that mentality a little bit more?
Honest answer, I don't know. My guess would be probably not, just in terms of, you know, I guess without the emergence of loose head, would the guys that have come out have felt confident enough to do that and to share and to tell their story? I mean, the one that jumps out now, one of your ambassadors, Denny Solomona, like, you know, we always see the product on the pitch, the 80 minutes there, whether it's for sale or for England. We never, ever see what goes on behind. And, you know, I mean, I know people close to me that have suffered with mental health, and, you know, I ended up apologizing and saying, like, you know, I wish I had no idea. Obviously, I would love you to have reached out. But then also, like, if I'm not really aware or I'm not really offering that, then they don't know they can either. So it's kind of a two-way thing. And, you know, you need more people talking about it, more awareness about it, more understanding to be confident enough to say, right, you know, I am going to share my story, in the hope that, A, I guess it helps me, but it also helps other people as well. So that, like I said, I think, you know, in terms of loose heads, definitely what you guys have done in helping that, you know, in making other guys more comfortable, has probably, yeah, had an influence in me, I guess, being more aware in my coaching of, right, I think there is a real window here of people that could do with more assistance, more mentoring, more support. And I'm more than happy to try and help out where I can.
Yeah, I think what you struck a chord with me there, Topsy, really, because before, you know, I started doing this for Loose Heads, and Mark got in touch with me, and me and Rob have had conversations about it before, that I didn't probably realise the significance of mental health. But since I've started doing stuff for Loose Heads and reading about it a bit more, and personal experience that have happened to my family, it's kind of like, well, yeah, you know, without the foundations like Loose Heads, I don't think I would have been aware of it. So I think you're absolutely spot on. With what you say there. So, and especially with Denny Solomona as well, when I did an interview with him a couple of years ago, I had no idea about how much work he's done around mental health, and no idea that he was part of Loose Heads. You only see him scoring tries on the pitch and being excellent for sale. So it's those kind of stories that we hope emerge from things like Loose Heads, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think we've obviously still got a long way to go, but the fact that people are becoming more confident talking about it, I think we definitely understand it a lot more. We can keep doing more, of course, but, you know, it just makes us think, makes us really think, makes us really kind of understand, and just makes you more aware. And we're always learning. I think you can never stop learning about these things, because I guess the big thing with mental health is that it's not that visible. So it's so hard to understand it, and you've got to be open and willing to talk and to embrace people and say, right, you know, what's going on? Let's talk about it and let's see if we can't help things.
Strange that this sounds very flippant, and it's not meant to sound flippant at all. But I was chatting with the patron of our foundation, which is Sean Edwards, so who's a fairly no nonsense guy. And at the end of our conversation, he said to me, I hope you're still getting your tracksuit on, mate, and helping them young lads. And I thought, and I'm not. I coached when I was able to, and now I'm just a tedious, boring alec-a-do at my local rugby club. And to hear you, Topsy, saying, actually, I want to go back into the coaching, and I want to get into that mentoring. We did a podcast a few months ago with Jonathan Davis, who's my ultimate rugby hero. And Jonathan Davis freely admits he doesn't want to be a coach, a full-time head coach, but what he would love to be, and the rugby world and the world would be a better place, where the Jonathan Davises and the Topsy Ojos of this world put a tracksuit on and mentored the young lads. And it's the 1 or 2% that you're trying to, you know, when you get into that situation, don't think you can beat that tackle. Just hang back and do this, or do whatever the magic is. And it's that, because you spent a lifetime playing rugby, and to lose that for the next generation is wrong somehow. And they benefit from playing the God's greatest game, that if he hadn't invented it, we'd have to invent it for him. But equally, having someone like Topsy Ojo around a club, around the academy, around the young lads, that's going to rub off in spade loads. And maybe they come and they say, this question isn't about rugby. This question is about, I'm not feeling the best, Topsy. Can I have a word with you? And that is the magic. That's where 1 + 1 = 100.
Yeah, you've pretty much hit the nail on what I'm trying to build at the minute. I mean, it's very kind of a wholesome approach. So obviously, I still love being outdoors, still love being in a tracksuit coaching, and that's what I get to do at school. But then it's almost like if you put the person in the middle, there's the physical stuff, you know, the skill develop and all that. There's the technical, there's the mental side, and there's almost like any other. So if your need is catch pass, I'm happy to do that. If your need is something's not right here, can we have a chat? I'm happy to do that. If your need is I need to watch the game for 45 minutes, can you help me understand this? We can do that as well. So just figuring out really kind of different ways to attack it, but definitely with more of a focus on that mental side as well, because, you know, again, it's probably the one side that has been really neglected up till now, but actually potentially is one of the most important.
Yeah, definitely, Topsy. And just touching on sort of issues in society and mental health awareness is clearly one of them. And me and you did an interview way back in June about another sort of prominent talking point at the moment, which is still Black Lives Matter. We talked about kind of educating people in that sense and sort of getting people on board and focusing on the situation at the moment, Topsy. And I mean, from my personal perspective, since we had the chat, it's been great to see sort of all sports embrace it, but there's still, you know, watching the football the other week with Millwall and Cambridge United, there's still a lot more that needs to be done. So is that education also overlapping into Black Lives Matter as well as mental health awareness?
Yeah, it is. That's an interesting one now, because I mean, my honest opinion now, I think with how long it's been and with the way that sports have supported it and, you know, showed their solidarity for this fight against racism, I think ultimately the people are booing now, or the people that, you know, seem to confuse it with other things, effectively they don't want to understand. I just think they're actively choosing not to understand why people are still taking a knee, why we're still talking about it. And, you know, as it is, I'm happy to say, you know what, you do you. I think there's enough people now that are on board with it, that understand it and are willing to fight and stand up against racism. The other thing, which again, we're not going to know how this is going, but the real conversations are going to be in rooms that we're probably not part of, in boardrooms, in offices, with higher powers who are now sitting and making these decisions and actually making a conscious effort to stand by what they said way back in April, June, saying, right, you know, we're actually going to shine a spotlight on racism, on diversity, and bring ourselves up to speed. I mean, case in point, the Sainsbury's advert, I know you guys saw that huge uproar. They used a black family, they also used a white family as well. Okay, so it was actually very diverse, very representative, but people wanted to be angry about the one advert that had a black family in it. So at this point, I think so much good work has been done. There will forever be more work to done because it's going to be a constant battle. But I think long as those conversations are happening behind the scenes in those important rooms where real change can happen, then I'm very happy with the way things are going. I'm happy. I'm actually happy that the players are still taking a knee, because at one point I did think, as I've just said, you know, I said, if they don't take a knee, that's fine. As long as the real conversation and the work is being done, that's okay. But actually, I think it was Harry Kane that came out and said, look, we actually still want to raise awareness about that kind of, I was like, well, fair play, because, you know, you're actually saying as a playing group and as a white player as well, captain of England, to say we still need to show more solidarity, more support in this fight. That was quite huge for me. So credit to him, credit to the guys that are still standing up. And like I say, there's still a lot of work to do, but I think we're going well so far.
Hi guys, I'm Sam James. I'm a Looseheads ambassador, and you're listening to the Looseheads podcast. Make your mental health a priority.
Just to come on to your sort of career now, Topsy, if you don't mind, and we've done, as I keep saying, we've done a couple of interviews with you about sort of you retiring from the game, but you are obviously the all-time record appearance maker and try scorer for London Irish. But before we get into any of that and the records which you have to your name, when did rugby become kind of serious for you, Topsy? Because just doing a bit of research, and I think you did a really good interview with the Rugby Journal last year, and you kind of went through sort of your family, and they seem to have a lot of different roles and different lines of work. So when did rugby become sort of your passion and your potential line of work?
Yeah. It was. I mean, I was probably a late bloomer compared to, you know, I didn't do any mini rugby. I only really started at school when I was 11. I went to Dartford Grammar School over in Kent. And I'd probably say when I was about 15, 16, where I kind of started to make progress, made county, made divisional, was kind of on the cusp of England junior trials, that even I became aware that rugby was actually a profession and something that you could make a career out of. You know, my parents, like, very education heavy, saying, right, you're not playing rugby, you need to go get a degree, go to university. So we kind of came to a compromise. Basically, my second to last and last year of schools where I was playing kind of England junior under 18s and under 19s, that's kind of when London Irish came on the scene, basically came to my house and trying to convince my mum that we should give rugby a shot. I've never seen two academy coaches so afraid. It was quite funny. But we decided, right, okay, we'll give it a shot for a year. You know, we'll see how it goes. We'll put a gap year in for uni, and hopefully we'll come back to it. And like I say, as they say, the rest is history. 1 year became three, became five, 10, and then 16 years later, professionally, still going now off the pitch as well. But yeah, London Irish, probably since I was a 17-year-old. So yeah, it's we got there in the end. And like I say, I think that they're happy with how things turned out. I still got my degree in the end, so I made sure I went back and did that. So we ticked both boxes.
I was going to say, I can't imagine if you told your parents, yeah, I'm going to be London Irish's all-time record appearance maker, score the most tries for the club and play for 16 years. If you told them back then when you were going to sign top two, I don't think anyone would have believed you.
No, well, it would have been an easier sell if I could have guaranteed that, right, don't worry, I'm going to be there 10 years plus. I'm going to do all of this. Surely you can let me play. But yeah, definitely a gamble. You just don't know what's going to happen. I remember there was so many of us in the academy at that stage.
Yeah.
And I guess the life of a professional, very, very new, fresh out of school. But yeah, just things just went my way, all fell into place.
You mentioned sort of your time at Dartford there, Topsy, and I'm right in saying you played in the Daily Mail Cup for them, if that's right?
Yes, we did. We did. Painful memories.
Sorry to bring that up, because I was going to talk about sort of, you know, you've got these records, but I think Rob has got possibly one up on you in terms of Daily Mail Cup, Rob.
Yeah, we mentioned this. So every podcast we do, we have a pre-podcast planning meeting before, which is where we just have a bit of a chat. And Chris mentioned this, and I said, absolutely more than happy for you to bring up anything about the Daily Mail Cup. we won the under-15s Daily Mail Cup at school. It was by far the worst game I ever had for school there at Twickenham. But yeah.
Hey, we still got there though at Twickenham schoolboy rugby. Yeah, you'll take that.
Absolutely.
It was the semi-final of the 18s VARS competition. Were we the away team? No, so we were the home team, but we had to play at a neutral venue, which was Castlecroft up in Wolverhampton. Because we drew, we weren't allowed extra time. We weren't allowed, you know, to kick for goals or anything. So we went out because we were the home side, even though we'd driven X amount of miles up from Kent, and the team we were playing were from Birmingham down the road, and they ended up going through. So
that happened to us. That happened to us in the under-18s. We were at home. We drew 10-all, and we went out. But we weren't. We were actually at home. But
yeah.
Anyway,
devastating. So yeah, there we go. Lessons, life memories.
And just bringing it back to the bigger stage, sorry, Rob, to belittle your achievement with Twickenham and Wilmslow High, but obviously, Tops, you joined the club and you seem to be on an upward curve as a club. You know, you're reaching Heineken Cup semi-finals, you're reaching the Premiership final. I mean, what was that time like at the club? Because they just seemed to be going in one direction.
Yeah, it was special. Like, I mean, that's probably the appropriate word for it. It was kind of one of those moments, and you've seen it with other teams, you know, with Saracens previously, probably with Chiefs at the moment, where everything just clicks. Like, you are very, very confident in what you're doing. Everybody's on the same page. Connections are in sync. Like, your structures work, but then, like, almost like your unstructured work, like, functions as well. So you almost like you have a rough plan, but if something else happens, everybody just reacts. You just go with the flow. And I guess we had as good a time on the pitch as we had off it. You know, we had the good blend of, I guess, young, like enthusiastic kids coming through the academy, kind of established pros, a bit of foreign stardust as well. And we just had a brilliant time, you know, really well coached, just the whole setup, like I say, on and off the pitch was brilliant. And it just kind of meant that we could really thrive and play to our best. I guess the only thing missing was, I guess, getting over the line in one of those tournaments. You know, I think we had, you know, Challenge Cup final, Heineken semi-final, Premiership final. You think just one of those, what difference would that have made? I mean, who knows? But that kind of would have been the icing on the cake. But in terms of, you know, time and period and like for the club, it was just brilliant. Like, you know, some of the best times for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned sort of the mix of homegrown talent and international stars as well, Topsy, and we're seeing that more and more now with squads, but it just seemed like, just reading back at some of the match reports that I did yesterday, but you had a great balance between both of that homegrown talent and international stars, and that sort of guided you to, as you say, nearly winning those trophies.
Yeah, we did. I mean, and I guess in kind of key positions as well. So, you know, like the balance right the way through. So, I mean, you know, say in the engine room now, we had like Bob Casey and Nick Kennedy, two of like the hardest working, most studious second rowers you could ever meet. You know, it's almost like every opposition lineup ball was our lineup ball because they had more than a 50% chance that they were going to nick it. We had Chris Alafir at eight as our enforcer. So you knew that we were going to be okay with him in our team. Mike Catt at 10, you know, Catty with his career and what he did kind of running the show. Mapasua comes over, Tangi Thakinbau comes over. So you've got this unbelievable island talent. And then a couple of like us young English thoroughbreds coming through, myself, Dylan, Steph Armitage, David Pace, those sorts of players. So just like a really good balanced team. But I guess there was no kind of hierarchy or, you know, no egos in that. We all just got along really well. Players, partners, off-field staff as well. Just a really, really good blend. And like I say, we just managed to really get things right.
Talking about that talent that's kind of come through and was part of that squad and perhaps a bit more recently, just looking at the list of wingers that have come through London Irish and, you know, Anthony Watson, Marlon Yard, Joe Coconasiga, you know, Ollie Hassell-Collins more recently, even Jonathan Joseph's had a few runouts for England. Now, I'm sure you're kind of far too modest to claim any credit for the success of all
this. No, I'll take all the credit. I'll take it all.
I guess that answers my question then as to what's resulted in so many, you know, world-class guys coming through in that position.
I mean, if I think about it, I mean, I know those guys, especially, you know, the guys like JJ and Anthony that you mentioned, you know, they had such a fondness for Neil Hatley and the way he did things and where he brought them through. And Hats was brilliant, even for me coming into the Irish first team, like just a brilliant guy as a teammate, as a friend as well. And I guess that's translated into the players that he then ended up looking after in the academy. I guess as a succession line as well, you know, it helps if, you know, the guys in front of you and behind you in the same position, you know, you all get on really well. We're all good friends. We're competitive. You know, we all want to play in the team, but we're all still trying to help each other because ultimately we're thinking about the club and that. So, you know, as much as I'd say maybe I did help those guys a bit, I don't know, but I think we learned off each other, you know. And I guess as I got older, those young guys keep you on your toes, but also you push them and help them understand what it is to be a professional, to be a first team player, and almost what it's going to take the shirt off me, for want of a better word. You know, I remember even when I was coming in, you know, I had Justin Bishop, Paul Sackey and Mike Horak were the back three, all got on unbelievably well. But ultimately you're like, right, okay, I'm 17, 18 now, but ultimately I want to be where you are playing in the first team. So it's kind of finding out how you do that, obviously, without souring things. And, you know, no one really goes out to do that. You know, I guess we all understand the nature of the game, the nature of the beast. And ultimately we all want to win. We want to be winners. I think that's it. Yeah, that list of players, when you go through it, I mean, there's half a dozen Lions in there. There's an all-international 15 in there that's come through the academy. So it's definitely credit to the club, I'd say, and I guess the coaches that have been in the academy, because you know, you don't get that success rate without having something go really well in the setup.
How good, close up and personal, was Stefan Armitage? And would you just want to comment now? Now there's a 30-year rule applies that why he never got more caps for England.
Steph was one of, if not the best seven I've played with. Just with how he was built, like, you know, very broad, but, you know, low centre. It's almost like if he was on the ball, he was going to steal it. He guarantees you 5-6 turnovers a game. Just impossible to move. And almost similar to like what Jack Willis is doing now. Like, he was just head and shoulders above everybody else. And I know he got frustrated that he didn't get more international opportunities, because it probably got to that stage where it was, I'm literally doing everything I can. I'm doing everything I'm asked of. I'm the best in my position by a country mile. Everybody's saying it. Why am I not getting picked for my country? It's the one thing I want to do. And I guess you get to a stage whereby, and obviously that, I think, you know, France was booming at that point as well. It's like, well, if I can't play for England and I want to really challenge myself, then maybe I have to look at where my future lies. And that's the decision he had to make.
Strikes me he'd be ideal in this era that we have right now.
Oh, he'd be thriving. Absolutely. I mean, because it only takes a 2-3 second lift on the ball and it's yours. And, yeah. You know, he was a master of it. No doubt about that.
Was it a frustration for you, or was it kind of quite pleasing in a way, seeing all these guys come through the academy, but then being poached off either to Bath, to France, all across the Prem, really?
At the time, I understood it. I was like, you know, it's a short career. Like, I felt, you know, I was lucky. I'd been at Irish kind of 10 years by then. And I just said, you know, I'm one of the outliers. It's just not the case for a lot of the other people. And, you know, you've got to try and maximize your career. I mean, I was sorry to see them go because I knew how talented they were, but you understand people have to make decisions. You know, initially it's about you and your career, then it becomes about your family and your kids. So kind of different decisions at different stages of your career. Would love to have them to all have stayed, because you then look at what they went on to achieve and think, man, if they'd have all stayed at Irish, who knows what would have been possible. But, you know, you can't really have that, because you don't know what would have happened. Things might have changed. So as nice as it would have been, you know, I appreciate the reasons why they left, and, you know, they've all gone on to flourish, still good friends with all of them. Hit them up for shirts and tickets whenever I need now. So, you know, you build up that network of friends dotted all around the country, which is always very handy. But it's professional sports. You know, we get to do this for 10 to 15 years if you're lucky, and then you've got a long time doing something else. So you have to make the best decisions for you.
Yeah, I mean, you listed so many good players there, Topsy, and I'm going to probably embarrass Rob now with this next point. I think he knows what's coming. So we had a chat yesterday, Topsy, about sort of you and your career, and Rob said, oh yeah, I used to pick London Irish when we played Rugby 08, and he listed a few of the players which you mentioned there. And Rob said, go on, Rob, I'll let you tell it.
Well, I think you came up as the default kicker, Topsy. So I used to kick with you, conversions and penalties. And I'm just going to throw out there and say, you're a pretty good kicker. So I asked the question, did he ever used to kick? Which I don't think you did, but you were decent on Rugby 08.
Jeez, they were generous. They were very generous. Here we go. Oh, gosh. The one time I kicked, so here's another story. So I kicked for England under-19s. For a couple of games, because our main kicker was out injured. I'd say I was not the best at all. But then we went to a Junior World Cup, and one of our games ended up going to a playoff against Ireland, and it was 5 kicks, 22 metres out in front of the post. And I missed. I hooked it completely. It went nearer the corner flag than through the sticks. And we ended up losing, and I think I didn't kick again after that. So...
the Rugby 08 producers weren't at that game.
Yeah, I've got friends at EA. I must have. Someone probably saw me. No, we'll be nice to that guy.
Hey, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Topsy, again. But sticking with Rugby 08, I didn't think we'd go down this angle when we were doing the podcast. But could you name maybe some of the players that were in the top 10 potentially?
Oh, Rugby 08. Let me see. 7. Probably any Kiwis? No, it would have been English team. I'm thinking New Zealand players who would have been top rated. It would have been Leicester. A lot of Leicester and a lot of Wasps around that time, I think. Let me think. Alisana Tuilagi. He'd have had some good ratings on there.
not for kicking.
Not for kicking, no.
Not definitely. For kicking.
Not for kicking. Charlie Hodgson. Charlie Hodgson.
Charlie Hodgson. He was up there for England 100%.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Charlie definitely. Toby Flood, probably in and around then as well.
He was in around there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Had Goody retired, Andy Good.
Johnny Wilkinson was obviously in there. I think he
yes, Johnny was still going, yeah.
Yeah, he could kick it from the 1 5-metre line to the other, if you got it right.
Of course, upgraded stats for Johnny, but fair play.
Anyway, back to the normal chat, rather than talking about rugby away with Top C. We don't have to. We can make the whole
section. It's all right.
You touched on sort of the players that you're playing with, and you said, you know, you're looking at sort of the memories you had at London Irish Top C. Was it a difficult decision for you to retire? Because I can guess, as a player, it's always tough to say, right, I'm going to have to take a step back. But considering how long you were at London Irish and the memories and the friends you made there, it must have been a tough decision when you decided to.
Yeah, it was, because, you know, it's all you know. And even with the work I'd done in preparing and knowing, you know, as I got into my 30s that, you know, I can't keep doing this forever. Even that moment to kind of say goodbye, I do remember, like, I think I told the coaches and I told most people at the club, and it was like, right, okay, I kind of need to announce this, and prepped what I was going to say and how I was going to do it. And then I was like, I don't want to. Even though I knew I was going to do it, I knew it was happening. But, you know, it's like I say, it's all you know. It's what you love doing. And to kind of make that decision to step away is huge. I guess the comfort that I had, you know, I'd had a long career, had a really good career, had achieved so much. I had a lot of good things lined up that I could move into. So timing wise, it was good. Obviously with family, young kids growing up as well, the opportunity to probably spend a bit more time with them and to not have rugby dictate their lives for a bit was also kind of a good pull the other way. And yeah, in the end, you just have to, I guess, pull the trigger. And, you know, it was definitely emotional for kind of that back end of the season. I remember the last game, I think we played Ealing in our last league game at the Medeski. And kind of the final whistle went, and it really hit me at that point. I remember Brendan McKibben kind of just grabbed me and was like, mate, just take a minute if you need. And I was like, right, okay, like, that's it. You know, we're done. But, you know, I look at how things have gone since, and I mean, probably in time-wise, you know, I'm lucky that I retired when I did. You know, there's always that, oh, is it the right time? Should I do one more year? Irish are back in the Premiership. Look at the way 2020 has gone, and I remember I spoke to you, Chris, about, you know, guys in limbo. That probably would have been me, you know, thinking about, right, all the stuff I'd planned to do one more year, retire in the summer, move on. My season would have been cut short in February, March, with maybe nothing planned. And I'd be scratching my head going, right, how do I put food on the table and support my family? So, you know, there's no perfect time, but I like to think that I made a good decision at the right time for me and family as well.
No, just listen to you, Topsy. It doesn't sound like you have any regrets at all about your time at London Irish. But was there any temptation to maybe say try something different, or were you just settled with London Irish and you thought, no, I'm going to stay here. Life's good here. There's no need for me to potentially move on.
No, there's always temptation. France came calling at one point, but I guess at the time that was kind of when Irish were flying. Things were going really well, so it was the best decision to stay. And kind of see if we could get over the line, try and actually pick up a trophy. I guess after that, then, even when things weren't going as well, it wasn't just about me anymore. I'd met my wife by then, kids were on the horizon. So, you know, you're thinking about, do I uproot everyone and move them somewhere else? So, I mean, I look back and I always say, when it came time to thinking about contracts, for me anyway, it was always the best decision to stay. You know, it was where I was settled, where I was happy. Not content, or, you know, I was still feeling challenged and still feeling like there was a job to do. But also it wasn't just about me anymore. So I have no regrets at all about my career at Irish. I mean, so I can't, there's no way. I look at what I was able to do and achieve, you know, despite the relegations and all that, you know, to be sat here now with records and accolades and an England shirt kind of sat behind me. again, you know, if I rewind to the 17-year-old me in my parents' front room trying to sell them the rugby dream and said this is how it would end up, you know, I think they'd be quite happy, and I'm very happy with how things have played out.
Yeah, but we'll touch on England in a minute, Topsy. But one thing that Mark mentioned yesterday, and I might steal his thunder here by asking you the question, but he made a really good point that obviously you're still connected with London Irish, Topsy. You're an ambassador for the club. You're doing great work with the foundation. And we had a chat a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, about the new stadium, the first game there. And it just seems like with Declan Kidney there, Les Kiss is there, you've got Sean O'Brien is obviously one of the main stars in the team. It seems like Irish are getting that identity back that maybe you had, you know, when you first started out there.
Yeah. I think the ingredients are there, definitely. You know, this, a lot of teams talk about 5-year plans and that. And, you know, Irish have had one. You know, part one was the training ground, which they got at Hazelwood. Two was the stadium. And then three was kind of re-establishing themselves as a force on the pitch. And you look at the team now, the squad, you know, the academy guys coming through, your Tom Partons, Isaac Curtis-Harris, your Ben Loaders, Hassel Collins. You think, right, okay, a lot of quality there. You look at the internationals now, you know, your Kepus, O'Brien, Blair Cowan, just out of the Scotland squad, Albert Tuisui, one of the best players last year, and you think, right, okay, there's some good talent there. Adam Coleman's in there. Rob Simmons is coming over after he's had a break from Super Rugby. So you put all that together and add in, I guess, the buzz and the excitement once we get fans back in of the new stadium, of building something new in Brentford, in London, kind of being back into London. You think, right, okay, there's the makings of something here. Not going to be easy, never is, of course. One thing I know about this Premiership is just so relentless. Things can change week to week and you just got to stay on your toes. But I'm quietly confident about the future for Irish in terms of what they've got set up now and what they're able to go and achieve. You know, they just need to, you know, ride it out. It is tough. The Premiership is so tough. And even for even the internationals coming in now, you know, the Premiership is just such a different beast, but there's enough talent, leadership and young talent in the squad to handle it and kick on. So yeah, excited about what the boys can do.
Yeah, and I watched the Sale game the other week when I think they had fans in the ground, Topsy. And unfortunately, obviously, Tier 3's come in and we might not see that for another few weeks again. But it just seemed like the stadium is just absolutely perfect. I know we talked about it, but it seems perfect to host sport, but rugby in particular. And it just seems right in the heart of Brentford, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, I still wonder how they got the stadium where they did, because I mean, driving over Kew Bridge, right on the corner of the M4, you think, right, a stadium shouldn't fit in there, but they've got it in there. You've got the transport all around and even just the design as well. Like, you just feel really close to the action. So, I mean, I think I did a game there for the first game against, who did they play? Leicester. Sorry, the first home game. I was there working for TalkSport, and even just the view from a media perspective, I mean, you're barely 10 metres from the pitch and like the action's kind of right in front of you, almost in your face. And because I know all the fans enjoyed being back for that Sale game. Of course, now that's taken away for a while, but almost maybe whet the appetite now for when we get people back in mass numbers about what we can create with more bodies in there.
Yeah, and speaking about special stadiums, that leads me quite nicely on to your England appearances, Topsy, because I think your debut was at Eden Park in front of 44,000 people. And I think you were star of England's show, really. I mean, before you joined the call, Rob said, oh, I watched Topsy's try. It seemed like a very, very special day for you in terms of those couple of tries.
Yeah, it was. I remember getting a lot of messages from friends just saying, like, shouting at us screen, saying, like, run, run. I think it was Muliaina chasing me for the corner. Just unbelievable. I mean, you know, people start talking, you know, when you're on form and things are going well, saying, oh, you know, should he be in the squad? Shouldn't he be? I definitely wasn't expecting to go on tour. I was hoping to make the Saxons and go on the Churchill Cup. I know there were one or two injuries in my position, and then it kind of became more of a reality, more of a possibility. And then off the back of our Heineken Cup run as well, finished the season strong, and next thing you know, you're getting a phone call from Martin Johnson saying you're coming on tour. So played the Barbarians game at Twickenham. The next day we fly to New Zealand, and you know, again, you think, right, okay, you're in the squad, maybe you're here for experience or you're filling in, there's been a few injuries, and then the team gets named and you're like, right, okay, okay, we're in, this is happening. But I mean, I had such an unbelievable time, you know, and I'm able to look back now and really appreciate it probably a bit more because, you know, would I have loved more caps? Absolutely. You know, I say to people, I would love to have, you know, played a home international, the Six Nations or an autumn international at Twickenham. I mean, that would have been brilliant. But again, you know, I've been told, you know, few people have done what I've done in terms of going down to New Zealand, in terms of scoring twice on debut and kind of having that, which no one can ever take away from me. So that experience, being able to play for your country, you know, facing the hacker as well. Like, I mean, I loved it all. You know, it was more excitement. People said, oh, were you scared? Oh, did it make you nervous? Like, I'd had all day, because it was a night kickoff, getting myself prepared. So I was just desperate to get out there and to get stuck in. So, you know, I've been watching it all on TV probably 5-6 years ago as a kid. And then you're out there doing it for real. So brilliant, brilliant experience. And yeah, loved it.
You mentioned for that try that everyone was just like, run, run, run. There's that situation, in that situation where you've intercepted a pass, there's a split second, isn't there, where you have to make a decision to back yourself or go for the step. And as a fullback and a very slow one, I always had to do the latter. But you always had the pace.
Well, first thing I always check, I say, right, is anybody actually going to chase me? And then you're like, right, okay, somebody is chasing me. And then, like you say, it's about your angles now. And I think once I'd committed about 40 out, like, I knew he had the angle, so I wasn't going to be able to step. So it was kind of an all-out foot race. And I, like I say, probably had like enough to spare, like 5 or 6 meters. But yeah, there's always that moment where you think, right, okay, I have to commit one way or the other. Back to my gas, just about got there. I think another 5-10 meters could have been a bit tricky, but we had enough to get there in the end.
That is why Top Soldier was rated better than Dan Carter on Rugby 08. And that's the story.
Well, justified. I intercepted his pass. So, you know, maybe he knew. He knew. He's like, go on, here you go. Here you go. You can have Rugby 08. You can have it.
And just one thing I wanted to ask you there, Topsy, in terms of sort of that phone call you had from Martin Johnson. And I've never met him. I've never had the privilege to interview him. But what was that like? That must have been quite surreal because, you know, we do have, you know, these iconic coaches in the game. But Martin Johnson, you know, World Cup winner, giving you a phone call and saying you're going to be part of my team must have been very surreal but special at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, that's the word. Just because, I mean, I remember like being sitting in my front room watching the 03 final, watching him lift the World Cup, and then obviously all kind of the furore around him being appointed and him taking over. So, I mean, he was going to start after that tour, but obviously he was getting his teeth in, you know, he was doing the squad announcements and the pick. So kind of when the phone rings and he's like, right, hello, who's this? And he's like, yeah, it's Martin Johnson. You're like, ah, okay. Try and play it cool. I'm pretty sure I was in the car at the time, so it's like, right, just try and focus, hope the phone doesn't cut out as well so you don't miss anything important. And then yeah, he was like, you're going on tour, been really impressed with your form, so just go out and deliver what you've been doing for your club. And like I say, he's big in stature and reputation, so you're like, right, okay, yep, I'll definitely try and do that. And that was it. It was off to New Zealand.
Hi guys, I'm Amber Reid and I'm a Loose Heads ambassador, and you're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Remember that mental health is a journey, not a destination.
In terms of sort of putting your coaching hat back on now, we're going to move on to the Mars 15. And I know you've been extremely busy, Topsy, but I'm hoping you've been able to maybe put together a team for us, if that's right.
Yes, I have. So I gave myself a bit of time to scribble something down, so... Right, but okay. I'm hoping I've got this right, because obviously it went best 15, and then it was like, actually, you need to be able to tour. So there is a balance to this. So it's a squad that will do a job, but will also be good on tour as well.
Because I've had a week off, Topsy, that the lads have taken over and they've ruined. But I'll give you the full.
All right, bring some control and order back to things. Okay,
get it back to basic, you know, and we can move on from that, and we can get some order established. So effectively, the Martians have landed. They're not aware that coronavirus is happening on Earth, and they quite fancy that lovely sloping hills in California, and they quite fancy taking over Earth. So they've challenged us to a game of rugby. We've done rock, paper, scissors to decide where the game will be played, and we've lost. So on Saturday, the shuttle leaves for Mars. So it's any era, any gender, any player to make up your Topsy Ojo's World 15 to take on Mars away.
All right. Could I ask, how did you come up with this? Where is this born from?
It's just the greatest story when you've had a couple of beers at the end of a rugby club bar, which I do most weekends with my old mates.
Okay. No, I like it. I like it different, definitely. It was good. It was good. Okay. Right. So I've gone for front row, Dave Flatman.
Oh, yes.
David Pace. Yeah. And the Beast, Tendai and Tamarira.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that those three would go well. Second rows, Simon Shaw and Mara Itoje. Mara is going to win us the game, basically. That's why he's coming. Shaw's a good tourist, loving life down in the south of France, so can always rely on him. Back row, we've got James Haskell, entertainment and DJ. Luke Narraway, very good tourist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've mentioned him earlier, but Chris Halafia, is our tour enforcer. Will also win us the game on his own if need be. Scrum half, Faf de Klerk. Ooh. Anybody who drinks out of a World Cup in their Speedos makes a tour. fly half, Alex Goode is going to play fly half on the basis that, we know what he's like after a win. Won't take his kit off and we'll drink for days, so he gets the nod.
He'll be staying on Mars.
Yeah, exactly. Centres, Selah Lamapasua. Touched on him earlier. He was probably the driving force for as good on the pitch and off the pitch as well. And he likes a guitar, so he's in there. Centre partners, Manu. Again, if you're willing to jump off a pier, you make the cut, definitely. wings, Martin O'Fire, another DJ, so we'll be well looked after, and Wheels. Nolly Waterman on the other wing.
Great.
Yeah, she's I've worked with Nolly a couple of times and she will entertain for weeks on end, so she's good to go. And fullback is Dylan Armitage.
I
was a bit unsure, but I think he could probably prove himself as a decent tourist, so yeah, that's the starting 15.
Just before we go on to the backroom staff, of that team, critically, they've got to have a leader. Who would be your captain?
Mara.
Would be Mara.
Oh, Mara's there to win us the game.
To not jump off a pit and win us the game.
No. He is like, Mara, there's part rugby to this tour, so you lead the way and then... Once the game is won, then you just enjoy and the other boys will take over. So
your backroom staff.
Backroom staff. Okay. I'm Waterboy because I feel there should be some sort of responsibility to make sure that we get through this and get home. I've thought about this too much. I only had about 20 minutes. Coach is Patrick Mahomes. Quarterback, Kansas City Chiefs. Trick plays, just non-stop trick plays for this team. So, yeah, I think he probably wouldn't have us playing rugby. We'd be playing some other sport. But
David Flatman doing trick plays. Not sure about that, Topsy.
Well, yeah, Flats, you just stand over here and do what he says. Do what he says. Manager is Will Smith. Again, entertainer, would make sure things get done, but we're well looked after. Kitman is Kevin Hart, the comedian. I think kitmen always have stories and make you laugh. They just say things and you just like in fit. So, yeah, that's my crew.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
You've got the broadcasting team sorted there as well, Topsy, yourself, Nolly, Flats.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazon Prime be taking those Amazon rights. And...
Yeah. See, if they can get a shuttle to Mars, they can come and we'll broadcast it to... Whoever wants to see it, whoever's willing to pay for it.
Does Hass get in on rugby ability or DJing ability primarily?
I'd say borderline DJ / entertainer as opposed to rugby. but if need be, he can step up and do a job. So we've got the balance.
Great stuff, Topsy. Well, Topsy, it's been fantastic to chat to you and catch up with you again for the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Glad to hear all the media stuff is going so well and keep bringing us some good rugby action to enjoy over Christmas.
Yeah, definitely will do. No, thanks for having me on. And likewise to you guys, like I say, keep doing what you're doing. Really important stuff. The growth is just impressive. So I can only imagine what's in store for you once we actually get out of this pandemic at the moment and we can really kick on with things. So no, thanks for having me on. Merry Christmas to everyone. And yeah, I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you.
Yeah, we might be able to do a podcast in person. We've only managed to do one so far. So that's going to be
the... Yeah. Let's not get ahead of ourselves just yet. Can you imagine?
Yeah, maybe a bit too optimistic there. Maybe a bit too optimistic.
But yeah. Back in rooms with people. Yeah, let's looking forward to it.
Hey, I made tier two today in Bristol.
Oh, jeez. Lucky. Lucky ones. You're
not heading out, Rob.
To the pub. Yeah.
Well, many thanks again to Topsy for his time on this Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. As always, to Dave, Mark and Rob, thanks for your company.
Thank you.
And that has been another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union.
You're listening to the Loose Heads podcast. Join the movement.
Let's get people talking about mental health.
And together we will tackle the stigma. This is the Loose Heads podcast.